Did you know that the world was meant to end yesterday? Who knew that? But someone said it didn't, and you're right, it didn't. If there are any contradictions in the life of the Christian community, here's one, big one. And I should really have entitled this sermon, I think, My Life Full of Contradictions. But I think that's probably true of all of us. So this business about the world, that the world should have ended tomorrow, the apocalypse is coming on Saturday. I read this on Wednesday, and I thought that gives me just a few days to prepare. So how did this happen? Well, it happens because there's some... I don't know what to call this sort of person. I want to call them a nutcase, but I don't think that's fair. Silly person out there, putting together these notions based on the end of the world. This is not the first time this has happened, of course. YouTube is crowded with videos that make similar claims. You only have to dial up end of the world and you'll see enough to keep you going for the next week. The firestorm of the Golden Empire is one such video. Israel's New Beginning is another one. And then this person, this past, well, it would have been before Wednesday, broke out this complex timeline involving Abraham, the death of Jesus, Israel's Six-Day War, and the Balfour Declaration. You know what that is? It's the public statement issued by the British government during the First World War, announcing support for the establishment of a Jewish national home in Palestine, which was then an Ottoman region. All these things add up in this person's mind to the fact that Saturday, the 23rd of September, was to be the end of the world. Well, thank goodness it wasn't, because today we've got the opportunity to review what we've been saying for the last 8 weeks. I had no idea when I looked back at my diary that we started this series in July. July is the middle of July. And you know the logic of the questions, the place I got to with all the questions, and that was this, that my belief is that the people who drive up and down Withals Road actually don't care very much about what we do, or necessarily who we are. And so what is it that connects us to the people out there anymore? We're all busy, we've all got our own views of the world, we all need comfort from time to time. It's the questions we're faced with. And there will come a time when everybody of our faith and no faith will have to deal with the questions that we've been asking over the last 8 weeks. And my belief is that when we get to face people with those questions, it's better that we're clear about what our own view of that issue is. And this, at the very least, means that giving some thought to these issues is a good thing to spend our time doing. So, Building Hope, Real People, Real Questions was the title that I gave to it. And here were the first of the questions. Where are you hiding? Do you remember that one? I wanted you to find me, Granddad. Do you remember that story I told you about my grandson who coerced me into playing hide and seek with him one day and he went off to hide? The oldest trick in the book when you're playing hide and seek with your grandchildren is to ask them where they're hiding. 9 times out of 10, they'll tell you. It's a hard question to resist, actually. Where are you hiding, Quinn? He said, I'm under the bed, Granddad. And when I asked him later, you'll remember me saying this, I think, when I asked him later, I said, why did you tell me where you were hiding? He said, because I wanted you to find me. And why might we want to be found? Why might we go into hiding in the first place? Because I suggest that our fear and our shame drives us to hiddenness, and that has no right to drive us into hiding and keep us from view. At least that was the belief of the Israelites, and then of the Jews, and now of Christians. The Israelites built this wonderful story in the book of Genesis around the idea of the man and the woman hiding because they were greatly ashamed about what they had or hadn't done. I was afraid, scared to death, and because I was naked, I hid. was what the man said to Yahweh when he came walking in the garden at the end of the day. Well, there's this quote from St. Augustine, "You've made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." And that's when we covered, and that's when we are covered and reclothed, because as you know, the story goes on to say that that's what Yahweh did. He made clothes for the couple. Made whole again, made again into what we were meant to be. So come out of hiding, I suggested. Step out from behind everything that hides and limits you. The second one was, why are you angry? Do you remember the story of Cain and Abel? And it was about the anger that generates the energy that can do irreparable damage and harm. And like Hurricane Irma, it can cut wide swathes of devastation through your life. And here we consider that story of Cain and Abel. Why this tantrum, Cain? And it turns out that he was jealous because his brother's gift was accepted and his wasn't. Well, the man wasn't well enough put together on the inside to believe that even in the face of rejection, he was still valuable, endlessly valuable. And he fed off this disappointment and this anger enough to kill his brother, to put him out of his life. At least that's what he thought. Here you see, it turned out that the affairs of the two children and their relationship took precedence over the things of God. And I'm always reminded when I think of that, of those few verses from Micah where we're told to seek justice, love mercy, seek justice and love mercy, and that comes before walking humbly with your God. I think it's not an error the way that those things are put together in that passage. And so we learn from this that our life will run more smoothly when we put to rights the things that are to do with our brother or our siblings and our parents and our children. Get those right and our life will be a whole lot better. Then the third one was, what's the point of life when it doesn't make sense? And of course the person here was Job, and that was the passage that Irene read for us. Job, whose life went on hold when he was dealt a harsh blow. Do you remember his farm was destroyed along with all the stock, and then his kids were killed in a tornado, and all the time his wife urged him to curse God. Job remained steadfast, held on to his integrity, which is what the word said today, and after telling her she was talking like an empty-headed fool, think about saying, don't just say that to your wife, he said thoughtfully, and that's the key, we take the good days from God, why not the bad ones as well? And through all his intense suffering, Job eventually found peace and he found his voice, and we know that he lived a full life. Third question, what do you want and who are you looking for? I think I got one wrong there. I think I'm out of order here, but that doesn't matter. How many times do I forgive a sister or a brother who hurts me? Can anyone, there it is, there, look at that. How many times do I forgive a sister or a brother who hurts me? The answer is always, you don't stop. And that was the message from the story of the unforgiving farm manager. And we learned that since the covenant, since Jeremiah, it's over here, Jeremiah 31, and since Jesus, revenge and payback is an old-fashioned, out-of-date, useless idea. It's an idea that no longer has any merit or any credibility. And the question we asked was this, since we have all forfeited God's grace and forgiveness in one way or another, how can we get to the point that we are able to forgive each other from the bottom of our hearts? And Dietrich Bonhoeffer's prayer, Lord, our God, may we experience your mercy so that we too may practice mercy without end. Next question, do you love me? And the big question that lurks deep inside of us waiting for an answer from those who matter to us. In the story of the Peter and Jesus, do you love me, Peter? And Peter's answer, yes, of course I do, Lord. And Jesus accepts the answer even after Peter had denied him three times on the night before he was crucified. And that's where we're aiming. No matter the betrayal, genuine, deep down love accepts and welcomes again. Address number six. What do you want? There you go, that's at the top. I got that out of order, I think. What do you want? And remember, that was the Sunday the choir sang Saint Richard of Chichester's prayer. I'll remind you of the words, O Holy Jesus, most merciful Redeemer, friend and brother. Do you remember this? Beautiful. May I know thee more clearly, love thee more dearly, and follow thee more nearly. And of course, you'll probably remember that from Godspell, to which the words were added day by day. And the desire as Christians is to know and love, know him more clearly, love him more dearly, and follow him more nearly, so that we might find a way to take our bearings in a life that for most of us actually has been and is fairly turbulent, and it's one in which we can lose our way if we're not careful. What makes life worth living in the face of death? And we talked about the breath of life gifted by the Creator God that sustains us until the time we breathe our last and breath becomes only air. Do you remember that logic there? We talked about our mortality, and this week we've been confronted again by the fact that life ends. On Tuesday there was a funeral here for Mr. Bain. Mr. Bain and his family were attached to the village church, and after the earthquakes when their church was munted, they came here to have the funeral for their mother, and they wanted to have their funeral for their dad here. Just a little note here, Mr. Bain at 96 was the oldest remaining man who played rugby in Italy during the Second World War against the Springbok, against the South African soldiers. And I remember about that because my dad was in that team. Well, I reckon that this man and Mr. Bain might have played in the same team. And then on Thursday at St. Christopher's, the service of witness to the resurrection for Margaret Dacre, who was known to quite a few of us here, an artist of renown, who died on Sunday morning of last weekend. And in the face of death and the end of life, we were able to proclaim, just before her casket was carried from the church, those wonderful words from the Nunc Dimittis in Luke's Gospel, part of the great evening prayer of the Anglican Church, Lord, now let your servant depart in peace, for she has seen your salvation. She didn't have to wait until the end to learn about that. She knew about it long before she died. And so we reminded ourselves that there is a great deal to live for, made all the more winsome if we have seen the salvation of the Lord. As Paul reminds us, our hope is in Christ. And the final address was, do you really know who I am? Inspired not by a question from the Bible, but that great question of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's, who am I? Ending with that great declaration, whoever I am, Lord, you know me. O God, I am yours. And that mysterious story from Rudyard Kipling called The Gardener, about the young soldier buried in Belgium. Whose child was this? Was it this person's or that person's? We were never told. And that's what made me think that we all carry within us our own hidden mysteries. And so, what have I learned from this journey? I have to say it's been a great exercise for me, doing this series in response to those questions. First thing I've learned is that my life is full of contradictions. I probably don't need to say anything more about that. Believe me, my hunch is that yours is the same. The second thing I've learned from this is that I actually do need saving, and I want to say just more about that in just a moment. Before that, though, I want to read to you the final page of a book that some of you may have read or seen. It's a book by Noah Harari, who is the professor of history and teaches at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. It's called, I think it's called A Brief History of Humankind. Anyone read this book? It's been very popular recently. So here he says, we're an insignificant animal minding its own business in a corner of Africa, and in the following millennia we have transformed ourselves into the master of the entire planet and the terror of the ecosystem. Today we stand on the verge of becoming a god, poised to acquire not only eternal youth but also the divine abilities of creation and destruction. That's not far off the truth. Unfortunately, We have so far produced little that we can be truly proud of. We have mastered our surroundings, increased food production, built wonderful cities, established empires, and created far-flung trade networks. But did we decrease the amount of suffering in the world? Time and time again, massive increases in human power did not necessarily improve the well-being of individual men and women, and usually caused immense misery to other animals as well. And in the last few decades, we've at last made some real progress as far as the human condition is concerned, with the reduction of famine, plague, and war, although you'd wonder about that if you were listening to the news this morning. Yet the situation of other animals is deteriorating more rapidly than ever before, and the improvement in the lot of humanity is too recent and fragile to be certain of. We haven't been here that long, actually. Moreover, despite the astonishing things that humans are capable of doing, we remain unsure of our goals, and we seem to be as disoriented as ever, and as discontented. We have advanced from canoes to galley steamships to space shuttles, but nobody knows where to go next. We are more powerful than ever before, but have very little idea of what to do with that power. Worse still, humans seem to be more irresponsible than ever. Self-made gods with only the laws of physics to keep us company, we are accountable to no one. We are consequently wreaking havoc on our fellows and on the surrounding ecosystem, seeking little more than our own comfort and amusement, yet never finding satisfaction. And here's the question. Is there anything more dangerous than dissatisfied and irresponsible gods who don't know what they want? We need saving. I need saving every day. Not from suffering. I don't need to be saved from oppression, thankfully. I'm not interested in being saved from any final judgment. I'm not interested in being saved from annihilation. I'm not interested in being saved from the devil. I'm not interested in being saved from my own mortality. Not for any of those traditional threats that have been set before us as good reasons to be saved. I need saving from me, from myself. And this isn't salvation from the old sinful self, as in the classic religious sense. It's salvation from the illusion that we belong to ourselves, that I'm the boss. That's not true. It's salvation from my anxious attempt to secure and make sure my future. That's not necessary. It's salvation from the attempt to possess our identities and so secure our futures. It's good to know who we are as best we can, but that won't make the future secure. It's salvation from the struggle to assert our freedom and our authority. It's salvation from what the Lutherans call being turned in upon ourselves. Salvation from having a heart turned in upon its own twisted concern for self-preservation. And salvation to the death of the secure world that we seek to build around ourselves. And all that emerges out of Paul's words, I identified myself completely with Jesus. Indeed, I've been crucified with him. My ego is no longer central. It is no longer important that I appear righteous before you or even have your good opinion. And I'm no longer driven to impress God. Why? Because Christ lives in me. That's aspirational. Jesus interrupts our life and rearranges it. And finally, the thing I learned is this. It was something I picked up as I was reading Irenaeus, the great early second century church father and theologian. He said, the great glory of God is the human person fully alive. And to be alive consists in beholding God, or we might say, to be alive is living in Christ within the community of the faithful. The great glory of God is the human person fully alive. You're human, I'm human, let's be fully alive. That's what we need to be saved for. And so we've stood at the crossroads and looked and asked, where are the ancient paths? Where is the good way and how should we walk in it? For we need to know the answer because there is where our souls will find rest. And so our view of the world, shaped as it is by the Israelite and Jewish and Christian traditions, is remarkably up to date when you think about what we've been talking about. It's relevant, it's endlessly uplifting and encouraging. It's satisfying in the face of so much these days that's shallow and directionless. Life in Christ is life in its fullness. So don't be ashamed to speak out about your faith. It's not what everyone out there is waiting to hear from you, but it's worth talking about. And when the questions that we all ask are asked with serious intent by others of us, the answers that we will be able to give them will be remarkably satisfying. God bless you all. Have a good week.